Welcome to the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. Let's talk about risk, baby. Let's talk about... Okay, I'm going to stop quoting an 80s song and and dive into it. So I want to talk about risk. This is something that is of great interest to me. And to be honest, I'm actually not sure how interesting it's going to be to you. But we'll give it a try. We'll see if there's any feedback to this. Risk is very interesting to me because of the nature of the work I do. The work I do is all about helping people make this one decision. I mean, initially, I guess half of it or 60-70% of it is all about this one decision. How do I specialize? What's going to be the best way for me to specialize? What's going to be the most profitable, the most sustainable, perhaps the most enjoyable, you know, some combination of those factors. And that is what I often describe for most people as a high-stakes, low-data situation. And that kind of decision is almost always stressful for anybody to make. It certainly is for me. I think there's some people, some personality types perhaps, that thrive in those circumstances, and maybe they even enjoy it. Or if they don't enjoy it, they figured out how to function well under those circumstances of high stakes. And when I say high stakes, just I know that I probably need to do a better job of explaining English idiom. So high stakes, as far as I know, refers to the idea of betting money in a game like poker or something like that. And the stakes are, you know, the money that you've staked, literally, is it would be used as a verb, or, you know, it's the money that's at risk. What's at risk is really what I mean when I say high stakes. Or rather, when I say high stakes, what I mean is there's what feels to you like a lot that you're risking. And low data just means that when you say to yourself, okay, how do I make this decision? On what basis do I decide? Or are there factors or things that I need to be aware of to make this decision safely? The answer to that is yes, and I don't know what they are, or I don't know as many of them as I like. So you feel like there's a deficit of good information, useful information for you to use in making this decision. Now, I know that for some people, making this decision about specializing is not a high-stakes, low-data situation. It's easy. And I wish it was easy for more people, but it's not. It brings up lots of emotional content, some of which is not fun to deal with. And it just creates this feeling of, like, uncertainty. So that's why risk is so interesting to me, is because there is, to some degree, involved in this decision, there is an element of risk. What if it doesn't work out well? What if you decide and you made a bad choice? Or what if you thought you were making a good choice and it turns out to be a bad choice? That's risk. What if, I mean, it's the same thing as, you know, any activity where the outcome is uncertain, there's an element of risk. And I have heard it said that risk is directly proportional to, you know, the financial reward of some entrepreneurial activity. I don't think that's always true, but I do think it's part of the game, is that you have to manage and deal with a certain amount of risk if you're going to be in business for yourself. And so as someone who is, you know, here to advise folks on making this transition from generalist to specialist, I'm very concerned about risk, because I would like as many people as possible to be successful in making this transition. And it turns out that individual people have different ways of dealing with risk. I mean, that's perhaps the understatement of the year. Of course, you know, not everybody loves taking on a lot of risk. Not everybody wants to take on a lot of risk. And so we all have a sort of posture in terms of how we deal with risk. And certainly there's a range of amounts and types of risks that people are willing to to accept. But in general, not everybody has the same ability to handle risk. So I've been doing some research about this, and part of what I'm trying to do is get better at understanding anybody who, you know, comes to me for help, who hires me to help them. I would like to have a really, really good understanding of their, I think what we could call a risk profile, because as I've done research into this, it turns out that the way I was thinking about risk is somewhat simplistic. And that's what I'd like to spend the rest of this episode talking about, is what I've learned quite recently about risk. And this comes actually from the world of professional investment management. So there are people out there who will take your money and tell you how to invest it, or invest it for you, or give you input on how to invest it. There's a variety of job titles, so I won't pick just one, but those people. I had no idea until I looked into this a little more deeply. They have regulations that say they have to understand their client's risk profile. And so they're further ahead than I in terms of trying to actually quantify risk tolerance. And as I've done a bit of research into this, I've learned that there's actually risk tolerance is something you can break down into about 3 or 5, depending on how you look at it, different elements that comprise someone's risk tolerance. Is not the right word. Risk is one of those 3 or 5 elements. So risk profile is a better way to look at it. So, up until a few weeks ago, really, I would say when I was working with a client, I'd like you to tell me about your risk tolerance. And often when I'm looking for that kind of information, I try to make it easy and try to make it so folks don't get into analysis paralysis. And so I give them a 3-point scale to rate things on. 3 is easy because you can say, well, my risk tolerance is low, or it's high, or it's somewhere in the middle. That kind of maps roughly to a 3-point scale. As soon as you make that into like a 5-point scale, which is the next place most people would take it, because, if you, I don't know if you know what a Likert scale is, but it's that very common thing you see when you're taking surveys, where it's like, rate this from 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, and you've got like 5 or 7 or, 10 radio buttons, and you can only choose one of them, and it indicates, the strength of affinity you feel for something, or your preference for something, or how strong or weak you are in some area. That's it's used to measure that. It's called the Likert scale, Likert. And I gravitate towards a 3-point Likert scale, because as soon as you get beyond that, people, or at least, I don't know, no one's ever told me this, but I get kind of paralyzed saying, well, is that a 5 or a 6 or a 7? I just don't know. It kind of becomes an inefficient way to get a basic piece of information. So I have in the past said, tell me about your risk tolerance. Do you avoid risk? That's on the, left end of the scale. On the right end of the scale, do you seek it out, or are you somewhere in the middle? Do you neither avoid nor embrace risk? And that's typically how I would ask about risk tolerance. But as I found, risk tolerance is actually just one of, again, 3 or 5 components of someone's risk profile. So risk tolerance, and I'm going to link you to the research paper that this comes from. I found it a super interesting read. And just a quick tangent, where the paper is coming from is saying, even within the profession of providing financial advice, the understanding of how to quantify risk, someone's risk profile, is still, there's a fair bit of disagreement about it. And it's not something that's been, totally figured out. I think you could probably say that about any aspect of, the human personality or human thinking or whatever. There's probably always new layers of discovery waiting someone who's willing to go deeper into it. But this is, you know, the consensus, at least as of, I think, 2012, I think is when this paper was published, is that there's still a lot of work to do. But even so, this paper advanced my own understanding. So here are some definitions that relate to this discussion. The first is risk tolerance, which is very simply your willingness to take on risk. And this is a subjective measure. You can't, you know, get out a ruler or, you know, a piece of computer software to definitively understand someone's risk tolerance. It's very subjective because of something I'll get to in a moment. But basically, even people who think they can tolerate a lot of risk, there's still, like, how they perceive the risk is the part that remains subjective. So anyway, risk tolerance is your willingness to take on risk. This is a subjective measure. The next component of your risk profile is your risk capacity, which is your financial ability to endure a potential financial loss and still be able to achieve whatever your goals are. This is a more objective measure. So, you know, if you're starting a business and you have some money in the bank, let's say that you have $50,000 in the bank and you have access to credit, and you have an uncle who would really like you to succeed who says, you know, if things get rough, just call me. I've got some money squirreled away. And then the uncle says, just so you know, it's not a lot, but it's 10 grand. If things get rough, let me know. I'd like to help you out. Okay, so you have a pretty clear picture of what your financial resources are for this business endeavor. Those directly relate to your risk capacity. That's how much money you could lose, and then you're at the limits of your ability to fund this business unless something unexpected happens. But, you know, from what you can see right now today, that money defines your risk capacity, your financial ability to endure a potential loss and still be able to achieve your goals. You might get I'm going to interrupt myself here and remember for you a time I interviewed my colleague Nick DeSabato, and I think, pretty sure he said this on the interview, at one point he had like $5 or $10 in his business account, and he said that's how close he was to going out of business at one point. We all have a risk capacity, some ability to endure a potential financial loss, and that contributes to your risk profile. So you could be incredibly risk tolerant. You could be, you know, like, I'll just put everything I've got into this. I'll empty out my life savings, my 401k, my whatever. I'll sell furniture. You know, I don't care. I believe so strongly in this thing that I'm trying to build here. So that would be a very high risk tolerance, someone who's saying those kinds of things. But they could have a very low risk capacity. And I think for me to, you know, I think back, you know, a few months ago when I wasn't quite aware of this, it's easy to conflate those two terms, but they are distinctly different things. So likewise, your risk tolerance may be very, very low, but your risk capacity could be very high. You know, someone perhaps who's always taken the safe route and, you know, worked the reliable, safe job and worked their way up the ladder might have a very high risk capacity, but absolutely no willingness to act on that and take a financial risk by starting a business or making a risky investment. And that's fine. None of this is like any kind of value judgment. It's just fascinating to me to start to see how this works at a more granular level. Moving on, there's a third component called risk need. And this, I think this is relevant in business just as much as it is in the world of financial investments. The risk need is how much risk is required to reach a specific goal. So it's easiest to think about this in the context of saving for retirement. And let's say you're, you know, in your 20s and you're thinking ahead and you have a, you know, solid, what seems like a solid job. And you say, okay, I want to, you know, have this amount of money in some form of investment for when I retire at this, you know, this age when I think I'm going to retire. That determines a goal, which then, you know, when you combine those other factors, determines how much risk you might actually need to take on to achieve that goal. And, you know, in the context of retirement and savings, starting early lowers your risk need because you can just kind of sock away money in low-risk investments and reach your goal. But if under different circumstances with less time available, you might be encouraged to look at more risky investments. And I think the same thing is true in your business. You can be thinking about, well, how much risk do I actually need to take on in order to reach my goals? And of course, that's going to be driven by the goals and other things like the timeline and so forth. But again, that's another component of this thing that I was just thinking of as a monolithic thing, risk tolerance. But it turns out if you look at it at a more granular level, it's a, I think, a more useful way to think about things. Two more components of your risk profile. The next one is risk perception. So that is your perception or a person's perception of the risk of a situation. And surprise, surprise, our perception does not always match reality. You know, I think we know this. We've all had places where our perception of something did not match what we later found out to be a more accurate understanding of whatever that thing is. And so, you know, my fun example of this is if you had asked me in 2007, in the year 2007, what I thought the actual risk of me losing my job was, I would have said next to zero. My employer loves me. I'm doing good work. You know, I'm doing more than what I'm asked to do. You know, I would have said things like that. And that gave me the perception that the risk of me losing that job was very, very low. 2008 rolled around. the company I worked for, their primary client stopped spending money on outside vendors. Their primary client was Microsoft. And Microsoft said, we're, you know, all the stuff we've been outsourcing, we're going to do it in-house, or we're just not going to do it because we need to conserve cash. We don't know how bad this global financial crisis is going to become. And, you know, if you're a business with one client, there's only so long you can weather that one client not spending money on your services. So I lost my job at the end of 2008, got laid off, along with pretty much everybody else I worked with. And so my perception of the risk of this, you know, employment situation was off base. It was distorted. So again, risk perception is a factor in how people think about risk. And, you know, when I think it comes to, when it comes to specializing, there is risk. I think most people perceive a greater amount of risk than there actually is in that situation. So I think risk perception is a factor that definitely comes to bear on this decision of how you specialize. Okay, last component. Risk composure. So this is the stability of your risk perception compared to the reality. This is your ability to maintain your composure during stressful circumstances. So this really has to do with what happens in you. What is your thinking or behavior? What sort of changes happen in your thinking and behavior when you perceive that there is more risk that's kind of suddenly entered the situation? I know that's not the most elegant way to say it, but do you keep your composure or do you act in a sort of, do you overreact? Do you underreact? How do you react? I guess that's the best way to say it. Your risk composure is how you react when the perceived risk of a situation changes. So in the world of finance, you know, we have this all the time. The markets go up and down, and individual investors react as they're going to, based on their risk composure to those changes in the market. And I think about applying this to the world of your business, you selling your services, and one way that might show up is how many data points are you looking for in terms of feedback from the marketplace about the value of your services? One of the unfortunate things about being a generalist is that generally you're not getting a lot of inbound leads or leads of any kind. And that means you have a relatively small amount of data from which to make decisions about the value of what you do. Things can happen, and because you don't have a lot of data points to look at, you can make conclusions about the value of what you do based on, you know, incomplete data. And that all has to do with this concept of risk composure. I think the best way to sum this up is, how do you react when you perceive that there's a change in the riskiness of a situation? So all those things go together to create your risk profile. It's a combination of your risk tolerance, which is your willingness to take on risk. That's a subjective thing. Your risk capacity, which is more objective. That's how much financial loss you could endure and still be able to achieve your goals. Your risk need, that is going to perhaps drive how much risk you take on, because it's a way of thinking about how much risk you need to take on in order to achieve whatever your goals are. Your risk perception plays into this. So you might just sort of chronically over or underestimate the amount of risk in a situation. That's worth knowing about yourself. And then finally, your risk composure. When the risk level changes, or at least your perception of what the risk level is changes, how do you react? Do you overreact? Do you say, I'm pulling all my money out of this investment and we're going to just hold cash for a while? Or do you say, it's too risky to do market research. I don't like talking to strangers. And the one time I tried it, it didn't go very well. All those five factors of risk tolerance, risk capacity, risk need, risk perception, and risk composure come together to form your risk profile. So to me, this is, again, super interesting. I hope I've managed to make it somewhat interesting for you. And again, I'll link to that paper that a lot of this comes from in the show notes, in case this is interesting to you and you'd like to learn more.